I'm Robert Sickles, and I'm here with Kinda Kiefel, and this is the cold open number 33, the Snyder Cut Part 1 edition. So we are here today to begin what will be a 7-part podcast on all 6 parts plus the epilogue of Zack Snyder's cut of the Justice League for HBO Max, which came about because during the production phase of the original Justice League, Zack Snyder's daughter Autumn tragically committed suicide and he had to step away from the production, and Joss Whedon stepped in and finished the film, which was released and mostly reviled in 2017. And subsequently, as a result of what literally started as a Twitter meme, HBO gave upwards of $70 million to Zack Snyder to reshoot and recut, and we now have the Snyder Cut. Now, remember, the Justice League was originally going to be 3 movies, but now it's 1 really long movie, 1 4-hour movie. So we're going to start with talking about part 1. Does that sound good, Kinder? Are you ready?
So ready. Sounds beautiful. Yes, absolutely. And can I just say, we were just mentioning this, but the idea of us breaking it into to chapters, parts feels so great. And rewatching it in segments gave me a whole other view and a greater appreciation of the composition, I suppose, as opposed to the 4-hour run, which I'm sure you also watched in a single day, which we did, and it was epically long. But can I ask you straight away, as a sort of overarching thing, what do you think about the 4-3 format? What's the story behind it? What's the idea? And what's your feelings, Robert?
So I'm really glad you asked that question, Kenda. So it opens. It's part 1. Don't count on it, Batman. And the titles of the parts are hilarious because they're perfectly punctuated, whether or not it was a quote or whether it's just something that applies. But just about the first thing you notice is the 4-3. And I had recently had this experience. There's a Polish filmmaker that made a film. I can't remember his name. He made a film called Ida and a film called Cold War that are 2 of the best films I've ever seen, especially Cold War. And they're shot in 4x3, but they take place in that post-war kind of Cold War Eastern European block. And it just made real sense to shoot it in 4-3. It seemed like an aesthetic choice. I don't think it made any sense to have this as a 4x3 format. And in fact, it pissed me off. How about you?
Same. I have to tell you, I was really, really trying to like find the poetry in that or the actual like strong motivation as to why we would need that, what that would be on the director's end, because you're right, past that sort of what I feel like is more of the like old-timey camera shutter like feeling of there's a nostalgic feeling to it, but for this it actually made me wish for a wider view, because I feel like this film is supposed to be as wide a view as as possible for Snyder, so it bothered me also. I just kept filling in the blanks as far as what the extra ratio would have gotten us, right?
So In like an unbelievably kind of punishing fashion, I've actually watched this film twice because we watched it and then I watched it again because we thought it would be fun to do a 7-part podcast on it. But I had my first in-person movie going experience in 13 months on Saturday, in which resulted in me going to see Godzilla versus Kong.
Yes, same, actually, at the theater. Yes, on the big screen. Yes.
So tell me about it. Yeah. That was amazing about it. This actually applies to your question. The widescreen was awesome. Like the special effects in glorious widescreen on a big screen were often amazing. And I'm not watching, I'm watching the Snyder Cut on a big screen, but it's, you know, a home big screen. It's not a movie theater screen. But all I could, because there are some really great action sequences in this. And all I could think of is, man, I wish I could see the whole image.
Absolutely.
I wish I could see from left to right in a world that would, the scope is meant to be epic, you know, maybe, yes, maybe portentously so, right? And pretentiously, exactly, so,
but pretentiously, it's exactly.
Really strange choice to me.
I agree. And I feel like it's felt immediately as we get those long overhead sort of mountain shots and the tracking shots with those beautiful large landscapes. It is actually meant to be so much wider. So yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And I can't believe you also saw Kong versus Godzilla. It was meant to be on the big screen. I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. And same with this, you're right. No, fantastic. And I gotta say, I, like you, have rewatched it though in parts now. And on the second viewing, I judged it very harshly the first time, but we'll get into that. However, I feel like upon the second viewing, I really much more appreciated the casting choices from large to small. So how about you? Do you have any qualms with the casting?
I'll get into my qualms later.
Okay, good deal.
They come later. They come definitely later into the movie. How about you? Did you have any early qualms?
I just didn't appreciate it as much. I think it was just a little bit of an overview the first time, and I just kind of skipped past really thinking about the casting. But upon second viewing, I really thought about how excellent Cyborg and his family, and there's just some good stuff, and I just can't get over how spectacular Connie Nielsen is too. It's genius casting, I think, on her part too.
Amazing.
Yeah,
she looks amazing.
She's incredible. And she's so powerful.
She's wonderful. It's a little disappointing that we barely get Robin Wright in a flashback much later in the film. It kind of bummed me out because she was really great in the first Wonder Woman movie. So I had a question, and it's a really interesting question. And it's this: where do superheroes get their money? And the reason I ask this is because of what's going on in Falcon and Winter Soldier, right? When Falcon goes to get a bank loan and he's pretty much asked by the banker, like, so how do you make money? And he says, like, well, the largesse of certain individuals and institutions, which results in them not getting a bank loan. And then this, we get, like, how does Superman not have any money? How does Martha Kent get her, like, his ancestral manse repossessed?
Yes. Oh God, exactly. The foreclosure sign. It really kind of hit me the second time. Excellent question. I even, to the point of wondering where Amy Adams was getting the money to buy coffee every day, was like, what's the revenue stream here? Because if she's not going to work, I agree. I got caught up in that, especially because of only a couple references, as we only get with Batman, the sort of richness of the wealth of Bruce Wayne. But yeah, where is everybody else getting anything? I agree.
Diana Prince drives the sweetest Mercedes, right?
The sweetest. And her, so seriously, and her fashions are spectacular. Oh, like, amazing. Those are expensive clothes, right? So where is that coming from?
And so, tailored.
Yes, tailored to, like, perfectly. That actually connects very much to my question. I guess it would be for chapter two, but is her job being a conservator? Like, sure. Is that, okay.
At times she works at the Smithsonian,
yes,
and at times she appears to be working at the Louvre at the start of this movie. So I don't know whether she's some sort of curator or whatever, but my understanding of those institutions is they're governmental. And as a government employee, A, you're not making tons of money, especially doing what she's doing, but B, you can't just be gone. Like, you're typically a union employee, right?
Exactly. And it's not just on the weekends. Yes, exactly. Okay. I'm so glad you said that, because I was like, she's cleaning a statue. What on earth is the job? And you're right. Not as much money as you'd need for that sweet, sweet car. So I'm so glad you're asking these questions. That's excellent. Well, can I also just ask you, score wise, music wise, it's especially striking in the beginning. I feel like when the village, when Batman visits Aquaman in that sort of what seems like a Norwegian or Scandinavian village, the singing was striking and very different from the rest of the soundtrack. And I just want to hear your overall thoughts on music for this, on beyond this the standard superhero score.
I thought the music was the best part of one of the best parts of the whole thing. And I thought they really ingeniously combined the leitmotifs of the individual characters, particularly Batman, Aquaman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, who all have pretty distinct musical cues. And in particular, like that Wonder Woman is my favorite.
But I like that voice.
The heavy metal Batman tones and the heavy metal Aquaman. And then like that plaintive, plinking, limited note piano music that gives us contemplative Superman. So I thought the combination of music and some pop music in it as well was really wonderfully done. One of the best parts of the movie.
It was. It seemed actually more unique than, again, I gave it credit for the first time. I really noticed it. Even the like song, as we see Amy out of this character, as we see her mourning, that was really effective second time through tour. It's like, wow, this is a mix, as you said, a beautiful mix between pop music and their themes. And I think I noticed their music themes a lot more, which I think is just one of the coolest ideas, whatever the show. I noticed it most in 30 Rock because of commentary, but I connected it to this because you can really, there's a distinctive, beautiful little theme for each character. And I really like Aquaman's in particular. That driving guitar makes perfect sense.
Oh, it's right? Wonderful. So let me just say this as well. One of the things that I really noticed in this first one, whatever you think about Zack Snyder and his body of work, is he has a visual aesthetic, and it's clear and it's visible. And while there is a darkness to it, I often don't like, and like I talked about the portentousness, there's just so many beautiful shots.
Yes.
In this film, and their big sweeping landscape vistas that again really would have benefited from a format other than 4:3, but just seeing Bruce Wayne on the horse coming up upon that city, just spectacular theme. Seeing some of those shots of Themyscira as well, and the introduction of Steppenwolf and this great battle. Oh my gosh, I would have loved to have seen that in a widescreen format. So
same. Can I say though, that is one of the places where I feel like I saw the comic book framing a little better because of the 4:3, even though I did not enjoy it overall, there were certain shots where I can see exactly what the comic book page looked like. And I really liked that cropping just for that reason, where it was like, oh, money shot, money shot, money shot, money shot. And there was like a beautiful sort of punctuation to a couple of those spots where you could see exactly how the art would have translated. So that was kind of cool in that sense. It could see a page layout, right?
So depending on who the artist was.
Right. Sure.
And
yeah,
we'll
correct.
We'll get to that eventually, but it's not lost on me that Steppenwolf and Darkseid are Kirby creations. And when I think of Kirby, I don't think of small squares, right? You think of wider kind of splash pages, but we'll get to that. So just to summarize, Kinda, in part one, don't count on it, Batman. It starts with the death of Superman. We see a mother box wake up, cyborgs, and then we eventually see the introduction of Steppenwolf and his getting the Amazonian mother box, and really every character is introduced with the exception of Flash. He's the one character we don't see.
That's right.
In this first part. And then, so our major concerns seem to be the aspect ratio.
Yes, that's true. Can I say though, to add, although the casting was excellent, it took me a minute to get used to Jeremy Irons as Alfred, only because of the glory of the Watchmen and him being the sort of king of that universe. I'm just like, Jeremy Irons is not anyone's butler, but he was amazing. Don't get me wrong, but it took me a sec, if that makes sense.
It does. He is amazing in a succession of Alfreds, right?
Yes, because
Michael
Caine
was pretty wonderful.
Incredible. He's iconic. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. He gets the best line of the whole trilogy, saying some people like to watch the world burn, right? His story about Burma.
Yes. So,
okay. I'm Robert Sickles for Kinda Kiefel, and this has been the Cold Open number 33, the Snyder Cut Part 1 edition.